Hi, everybody. I'm Justin Chisholm, and you're listening to another episode of the Yacht Racing Podcast. This episode is the first of a two-part America's Cup special focusing on the US Challenger Syndicate, New York Yacht Club's American Magic. All of the teams have been understandably pretty tight-lipped about what's going on behind the fences of their team bases down in Auckland. This is the America's Cup, after all. But I've been lucky enough to speak to two members of the American Magic squad, testing manager Anderson Reggio and mainsail trimmer Paul Goodison. In this first episode, we find out from Anderson exactly what the role of testing manager is all about, and what it's like to spend your days chasing the American Magic AC75 around the waters of the Haraki Gulf. Anderson Reggio, welcome to the Yacht Racing Podcast. It's great to be talking to you. You're down in New Zealand with the New York Yacht Club American Magic Syndicate, and your role down there is as testing manager. Can you start by just telling us exactly what that role's all about?
Yeah, Justin, sure. Thanks. The role of the testing manager down here is basically integrated across all departments within the team, taking all of the goals and projects that the team has across all departments and sort of collating them into a cohesive plan that we can put in place on the water so we can maximize our efficiencies of a day and learn as much about these wild and crazy boats as possible.
So wild and crazy boats is right. and we'll come on to that in a little while. That sounds like a very technical role. Now, I know you as a navigator and a weather guru, and we've spent a bit of time together on various Volvo Ocean races in the past on the shore side of it. Do you have a super technical background that kind of lends itself to this for you?
Not so much personally. We have some exceptionally brilliant minds across this team. I mean, all the teams do, clearly, looking at what they're able to accomplish. And so for me personally, I'm not an engineer, I'm not a designer, I'm not a sailmaker, but I am able to sit in the meetings and feel myself lucky to be the dumbest guy in the room half the time, listening to these guys churn out ideas. And my job's just simply to organize those ideas into a plan of action.
So can you give us an example of a piece of testing, a department that might want, I mean, I guess we're talking gathering data here, aren't we?
Yeah, we are.
Give us an example?
Yeah, I mean, you can think of big picture top line items. You know, we put a new rudder into the boat, you put a new foil into the boat. You want to test new foil wings. You've got to have a way to structure that so that you're not changing too many components at one time. So that you can actually measure performance impacts of that singular item. You know, the guys want to throw a new mainsail on. Well, if we want to compare that mainsail against another mainsail, we got to make sure that we're doing so in similar conditions with the boat in a similar setup. And that's a major challenge in an America's Cup campaign, especially one as time crunched as this, because everybody's trying to develop as much as possible, as quickly as possible. So you do often end up having these disagreements for, say, where somebody wants to put something on the boat today and you got to say, no, hold, we can't put that on today because we've got another new component coming on that we need to test and be sure that that has a measurable impact on things before we go changing too much.
Yeah, because I would imagine, I mean, even when you're trying to test on a dinghy or a small keelboat, you have to be so careful that you're not changing more than one thing at the same time, because you just confuse the data then, and you don't know what's had the negative or positive effect on the performance.
Exactly, and that's the crux of the role that I'm in here. Of course, we're in the latter stages of the campaign, so it does get a little easier as the componentry becomes more consistent now that we're getting closer and closer to race time. But we still have a few arrows in the quiver that we've yet to pull out, and we'll do so strategically from here till the end of the campaign.
So let me ask you that really difficult question. Talk us through a typical day for you as the testing manager for the team. I know you're going to say there's no typical day, but.
No, I mean, there's a routine to it. You know, the day normally starts with me working closely with our meteorologist, Chris Bedford, to settle in on what is a good forecast for the day. And then we've got a good preliminary idea of what time we want to dock out, where we want to go to sail here in Auckland, how much space we'll have down there for any straight line testing we want to get in, or if we need to worry about transiting to different locations for straight line testing versus dropping buoys and doing race practice. And that all sort of gets collated together in a morning meeting where I put a proposed plan together out to the team. We make sure that everybody's got a good handle on what's new on the boat today, because no 2 days on the boat are the same in terms of setup. And then it's an agreed upon plan. We circulate that out, get everybody on the same page, kick off the dock and try to execute.
So that execution then is the sailing team, you know, it may be sailing straight lines, it may be doing maneuvers, it may be doing all sorts of things. That's something you would agree in that morning meeting with who? With Terry? With Dean?
Yeah, we end up actually having a group that's usually around 20 or so strong that meet together in the mornings, representatives from all the different departments, so that everybody feels appropriately represented and everybody gets a say in the matter. And you end up negotiating as you need to. And yeah, it includes Terry, Dean, our coach, James Lyne, the sail trimmers, and heads of department.
And your goal is to produce clean data, I guess. And that data is coming from, again, I'm making an assumption, a myriad of sensors on the boat.
I think we're up to somewhere in the range of 350 odd sensors on the yacht. You know, you've got, I think in the database, you're pushing a couple thousand data points or a couple thousand different columns of data logging at different frequencies, just to try to measure performance of the boat and provide feedback to different designers, engineers, sailmakers, et cetera, on the areas of the boat that are important to those respective departments. And all of that data, the majority of my job on the water is in real time marking that data with comments and sectioning it out of periods where the boat's sailing well, so that that data can be quickly cleaned and filtered and analyzed at the end of a day, so that our primary data analyst, Chad Turner, can churn out a report that we can all look at together and figure out what worked, what didn't, what we want to change, and turn that over into the subsequent sailing day. It's a remarkably taxing process of dealing with a huge amount of data that we've been refining now since the beginnings of the campaign to get into a very efficient state.
And that data is being stored on the boat, is being transmitted live, how is it getting to where it needs to get to?
I'm going to hold off on answering exactly how we manage our data, if you don't mind. It's all stored securely. We've got all of our data managed appropriately is probably the best way to put it. But there's
understood.
Certainly some data that's viewable live on all of our chase boats and viewable by the sailors. And we're able to give them real-time feedback on their performance on the water, which allows us to continue the day appropriately with a good understanding of how we're performing in the moment.
Gotcha. Now, I'm interested in this idea that you're marking up this data as you go to say, okay, you know, this, you know, boat was in looked to be an optimum sail trim at this point, you know, no distractions around, that sort of thing. That's takes a keen eye, and it sounds like tremendous fun in one way, but also you can't be looking around and enjoying yourself too much either, can you?
No, it's I find myself staring at a screen much more frequently than I'd like with these boats. You know, getting up and actually being able to look at these toys and appreciate what they're actually able to do on the water is not something that I'm really able to do quite often. I sit on our performance chase boat, where we've got representatives from different departments on the water each day as well. And everybody's looking at data that's appropriate for them. And I have a tablet in front of me as well, where depending on what we're testing or what we're working on in that moment, I'm putting real-time comments down to just mark that data appropriately so that it's easy to break down later. Whether that later be next time we stop the boat, where we can step on and give feedback of how they had just performed, or later being when we get ashore for a big top line report on the day.
Yeah, let's pick up on that point. So you spend, and I think I saw in one of the videos the team produced, that you could be on the water for 7-8 hours a day, or maybe more, and then come ashore, and there's still work to be done, is there, at that point?
there is. You know, for me personally, and for the team of people here that work with the data that we produce on a daily basis, you know, I hit the dock and basically my clock starts and I'm roughly 4 hours from when we hit the dock before my job's done for the day. We do a Wow. quick little debrief on the afternoon. I type up Circulator a quick report of just feelings on the day. I go through and clean up the data. I put all of the weather notes together from the afternoon to give feedback back to the meteorology team, and you know, just make sure that the data is there and ready for the analysts to analyze.
So just tell me, your working day typically is how long?
Let's see. On a sailing day, I'll typically get into the office shortly after 7 a.m. And if I'm home before 9 or 10 o'clock at night, that's that I'll take. It's on a sailing day. It's very few and far between on those sailing days that I actually get home to see the kids before they go to bed.
That's a pretty grueling regime you're working through there.
Yeah, but look at the cool trophy that we're trying to win at the end here. I mean, it's highly motivating, Justin, especially when you see that these boats are doing things that nobody was thinking of just a few short years ago.
Absolutely. No, it is a tremendously exciting project to be part of, and I'm sure you do, despite the long, I'm sure you went into it knowing that it was going to be long hours. It's been no surprise to you whatsoever. But let's just take a step back from the data gathering and on all of that work role. What's the pace of life been like for you since you arrived down in Auckland? Because when did you get there?
I got to Auckland in July, the beginning of July, and given the COVID situation in the world, everybody who arrives into New Zealand has to go through a 2-week quarantine process. So I got out middle of July and joined the team here, and we began sailing Defiant right at the end of July before launching Patriot, our boat two, in October.
And the pace of life down there?
The pace of life down here in New Zealand, it feels normal. The once you're through your quarantine and you're on the other side, it feels just like normal life. There's days where you wake up and you almost forget that there's a worldwide pandemic going on, and then it hits you and you remember as you're walking down the street and feeling free to just walk into a coffee shop and grab a coffee on your way to work that we're pretty fortunate to be here at this moment in time.
And the atmosphere around the bases now, obviously all the teams are down there, all of the second boats have been launched. You know, we're getting to the pointy end of this now. Racing is going to start in a couple of weeks, albeit the America's Cup World Series doesn't count towards the qualification, but it's going to be the first time the boats are racing. It must be getting exciting down there. Is there any sense of competition between the teams, or is everybody just getting on with their own job and kind of keeping their heads down?
No, I mean, for sure, everybody's checking in on everybody else and trying to get as good of a gauge as they can prior to starting to race on how everybody else is performing. The protocol limits pretty strictly our ability to line up with another competitor. So while lineups have occurred in a very, very loose sense, you're not allowed anything structured or organized. So if you happen to be sailing in similar waters to your competitor, but you're a few hundred meters away, you can get a general sense of how you're performing relative to them. And that sort of situation has happened to find itself more and more frequently now that all four competitors are out on the water pretty much on a daily basis. And that's just by nature, the fact that the water is so tight around here, there's only so much space that we can all sail in, and it's very much wind direction dependent. But you can get a sense for sure from everybody that we're ramping up pretty quickly and everybody's getting quite anxious to do proper lineups and proper races against one another here.
And the general mood within the American Magic Syndicate is everything's positive? You feel like you guys are on schedule?
Yeah, very much so. I mean, our boat is just finishing up a quick little period in the shed here. There's been many suspicions when you read different sailing journalists or websites that we've been in the shed for some panic. But in reality, this little shed period here has been on the schedule for 5 or 6 months now, that we knew that we needed to have a little push to have this little bit of a break to make a few scheduled changes and then get ready for the AC World Series and the Christmas Cup. So for us, everything has been on a schedule for a very long time, and we've been pretty happy to be executing that schedule as planned pretty much down to the day since we arrived here.
When I spoke to Terry Hutchinson before you guys left, he did the podcast with me, I guess it must have been back in June sometime, or maybe beginning of July, and you guys were just about to put the boat on the ship. You'd press the button on that, and he said he had sweaty palms every day because you know, it's a nerve-wracking game trying to win the America's Cup, and you make decisions that are going to live with you for a long time. From a testing point of view, I guess you have that pressure on you as well, because stuff needs to be tested. It needs to be validated. If you don't get that data, that's a problem, isn't it?
Very much a problem. There have been a few occasions where we've gone out to try to test something and the conditions haven't materialized the way that we had thought that they were going to. And you end up coming to the dock back with potentially more questions than you have answers. Those days are for sure are very frustrating, but you just have to, when you lack everything else, just trust the tools and trust the process that you're going through, that you've got the smart people in the right places to make the right decisions on what componentry will actually add performance to the boat. When we get to measure that and prove them correct, everybody's happy. On those instances where you measure it and it proves the opposite, everybody scratches their heads, but you find the lessons and you move forward.
And does the need for the testing gradually wind down as you get towards the racing period, when things, I guess, the configuration of the boat gets locked in place to some degree? I mean, once you're racing, you can't be gathering this data, or maybe you can you?
Yeah, we'll still be gathering data on our own performance while we're racing and doing the best that we can to compare that to our opposition. But as far as a structured testing program is concerned, you know, as you get more and more into race mode, that structured testing program definitely winds down and you move more into structured race practice and more of a tactical style approach to your days.
Now, I want to ask you about the AC75s, because I know you said you stare at the screen more than you're able to stick your head up, but you've probably spent more time watching these boats close up, or at least your boat close up, than most people in the world. Can you just kind of tell us what are some of the unique characteristics of these boats, say compared with the AC-50s from last time around?
Well, these things, you know, the AC-50s, I feel, had the ability to be a little bit more consistent in their get up and go. These things, depending on wind speed, you can have a very dramatic delta in time that it takes you to get up and get going and accelerate and get onto your foils. And you've seen that the different teams here have taken quite different approaches to their foils. You can have a bigger set of foils that might get you up onto your foils and foiling a little bit quicker. But then you may end up limit yourself in terms of top speed around the racetrack. And so there's these massive trade-offs, especially because of the fact that we have to, unlike the AC-50s, lock in our foil configuration fairly early relative to the competition. And a foil change on these boats is not an overnight affair. You're talking multiple days to change out foil wings on these boats. So you need to be able to have a set of foils that can cover the entirety of the range of conditions from 6.5 knots all the way up to 23 knots for the match.
And from a sailing point of view, what sense do you get from the sailors as just to how difficult these boats are to sail? Because to the uninitiated observer, they look incredibly difficult to sail.
They are incredibly difficult to sail. I think actually the best quote would be one that I heard Daltz say a couple weeks back, where these boats reward accurate sailing. There's no better way to put that. That these boats require a very precise setup, and they reward you extraordinarily for hitting that setup. I mean, we've been on our chase boat and watched our boat go from sort of wallowing and not looking all that great to where the guys found the correct settings on board, and the boat just took off to where we have all ended up with our jaws on the floor just watching the boat accelerate away from us. So there's still those awe-inspiring moments where when you hit the correct settings on these boats in terms of how the foil's set up, how the sails are trimmed, and how the balance is achieved to where these boats are, they reward you for that. And the team that will be able to hit that fine line, that fine groove the most is probably going to be the team that ends up winning this thing.
Yeah, accuracy and consistency. Have you managed to blag yourself a ride on the boat yet?
Negative. No. Done it plenty in the virtual world, but not in the real world, my friend.
That's a disappointment to me, Anderson. I think you're slipping.
The virtual world can be just as much fun, though.
I'm sure. And life in the chase boat must be pretty tough at times, isn't it? Because, you guys are just trying to keep up all the time.
That's exactly right. I was just having a conversation with somebody just prior to hopping on with you here, that there are moments where the chase boats are really starting to struggle to keep up with these things. When you get to the upper wind ranges, the speeds that these boats are able to achieve are massive. And when we saw on paper the speeds that these boats were going to go, there were people in the room that didn't believe it at first because they didn't think that it was physically possible. And now here we are actually seeing those numbers play out, both upwind and down, and you're on the chase boat just holding on and wondering whether or not we need to add a fifth engine to the back of the thing just to try to keep up.
Why are you guys not on foiling chase boats?
I think that's next. That's a really good question.
Did I just come up with that then?
Maybe.
I think that has to come at some point. I don't know if you know the answer to this, but the umpires, are we going to have on the water umpires that are going to try and keep up, or is it all going to be driven by the systems?
I'm honestly not sure. That's not an area that I've really stuck my nose into too much. Definitely, there is an electronic umpiring system similar to the last couple cups. Whether or not there's representation on the water, I don't know that that's actually been. I have not personally heard that yet, one way or the other. But we'll know soon enough. I mean, here we are on early December. We've got just a few days away before our first organized practices, where they're going to go out and set buoys, set a racetrack, and let us actually go around them in circles as a group.
Yeah, that's going to be fascinating, isn't it? And you'll be in the chase boat gathering your data for that as well, right?
100%. Yeah, wouldn't miss it for the world, man.
Yeah, that's going to be pretty interesting. Just a couple more questions. I wanted to just pick your brains, if I could, for there's going to be a lot of people watching these boats who are sailing fans, who are America's Cup fans, who maybe got their heads around the AC50 catamarans from the last event. But because we've seen so little of these boats actually racing or racing at all, they're going to struggle to get their heads around it. Can you give some tips for the non-expert spectator as to what we should be watching for during the race? I mean, what are going to be the kind of key moments of a race, do you think, with these boats? When could it go really right and really wrong?
Well, you know, if you're doing over 30 knots upwind and you fall off the foils through a maneuver and your opponent carries on at 30 knots upwind, that distance that your opponent's going to gain on you is going to be very massive very quickly. You're obviously well familiar with the term snakes and ladders. This has the potential to be snakes and ladders to the extreme when you're into the open race course. On top of that, the pre-starts, we're back to upwind pre-starts. So we're going to have a port entry, a starboard entry, and two boats jockeying for position to go off the line upwind. But we're also into boundary racing as well, where, again, if you're doing 30 knots upwind and your racetrack is limited by a boundary to boundary spread of around 0.8 of a nautical mile, it doesn't take you very long until you hit that first boundary and have to make a maneuver. So coming off the line in a position of strength is going to be very, very key to being able to have a successful first beat and be able to defend against your opponent thereafter.
Yeah, I think that's really good, really good insight. So, Anderson, for the team now, between when we're recording this, which is Friday the 4th of December, I think it's only probably less than a couple of weeks away to the first bit of racing, that AC America's Cup World Series event in Auckland. What does the program look like for you guys? Is it just more testing, or have you got some other plans?
Yeah, it's... We've got a couple new components coming online this week and a number of different things during this short shed period here that we've talked about that we want to try in different techniques on the water. So we'll be trying to spread the testing of those components and the testing of those few technique changes across the wind bins appropriately over the course of the days that we have this week. And we're actually, I think, just a week away from the first organized practice race, which is in the lead up to the Christmas Cup there. So we'll actually have proper practice racing against an opponent just 7 or 8 days away from now.
Such an exciting moment and such a great moment to talk to you, Anderson. Anderson, I really appreciate it. It's a Saturday for you. I'm a Friday for me here in the US. But a Saturday for you, so I appreciate you taking the time early in the morning to talk to me. It's been really fascinating to find out about your role, and it sounds like a lot of fun, but it sounds like a lot of work as well. So thanks a million for that, and the best of luck to you and the team in the America's Cup, and hopefully we'll be able to catch up again in the new year, perhaps before the match.
Thanks, Justin. An absolute pleasure, man. Great talking to you.
Well, that's it for part one of our America's Cup American Magic special. My thanks to Anderson Reggio for giving us that unique insight into the testing side of the American Magic campaign. In part two, which is available right now, I speak to British sailor Paul Goodison, an Olympic gold medalist in the laser class and a three-time Moth world champion, about what it takes to trim the gigantic double-skin mainsail on the American Magic AC-75. It's another great interview, and if you're an America's Cup fan, you won't want to miss it. For now, though, I'll just sign off as usual with sail fast, everyone.